Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hello and welcome to an extra special IGN UK podcast. My name is Gav Murphy and I'm joined by...
Joe from the IGN team.
And...
Daniel.
What team are you on?
I don't know.
The IGN team. That was very good.
Thank you.
Why did you say that though? Because this is special, because it's basically been taken over by Mr. Jeff Kaplan from the Overwatch team.
We've long made a joke out of the fact that we talk about Overwatch too much on this podcast.
Yes.
Since May the 24th last year when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
The best day. And... to the point where listeners started emailing us and telling us to stop talking about Overwatch ever again.
Fucking stop talking about Overwatch.
This is a huge fuck you to those guys. It's a whole podcast about Overwatch with the guy who made Overwatch.
I feel like that's okay. I feel like if we are going to have a podcast about all about Overwatch, to have Jeff come on and just talk about it is fine.
Do we have to stop talking about it forever after this?
Mm,
have we peaked?
Nah, I think that's fine.
Are we sticking it out to pasture after this? Overwatch is done. But yeah, you guys spoke to Jeff Kaplan. What did you speak to him about?
We spoke to him about all sorts. Like, we started out just talking about the games he liked at the moment that weren't Overwatch, which he seemed quite relieved about, I think.
Yeah.
We talked about Terry Crews and whether he'd met him.
Ooh.
We talked about... These are all teasers.
And just, like, yeah, lots of specifics about how he plays Overwatch.
Yes, okay, yeah, we really wanted to get into, like... Because he gets to talk about the meh, you know, the big stuff all the time.
Yeah.
It's quite nice to talk to him about just what he's like. My favourite bit, I was listening back to it, is when he gets to the bit where he talks about how he reacts to playing with a bad team.
Okay.
Like, what he says... He says it as if it's the right thing to do. I think he's actually a worse person than any of us in response to a bad team. It's really funny.
That sounds amazing. Tell you what, lads, shall we listen to it?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're joined with a very special guest this week. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
I'm Jeff Kaplan. I'm the game director on Overwatch.
Yeah, so it's become a bit of a recurring joke on the IGN UK podcast because we've been very professional with Jeff thus far.
Mm.
We've got you doing lots of really cool videos that you'll find on the website, and we've been very professional. But if you've listened to this podcast, you know that we play Overwatch quite a lot in this office. We probably play every lunchtime, and you and I and Rory usually stay behind after work to play at least 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
So I'm dropping all pretense of professionalism right now.
Yep.
So we're just going to speak to you for the next like 20 minutes or so about a bunch of stuff. The first thing is, what are you currently playing?
What games?
Yeah. What games are you
playing? I'm playing a lot of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. I don't know if you guys have checked it out.
I've seen the name.
Oh,
but
this is like where everyone's dropped into a map.
Yes.
It's like Battle Royale.
Yeah,
style.
Battle Royale. It's Steam Early Access right now. And I'm playing with my wife and a couple friends from work. And I have not had a game that actually makes me scream out loud in terror, in sheer terror, like that game has. Like, we'll think we're doing so well because it drops you in and you've got to find all sorts of weapons and whatnot. And you're running around and the whole time the circle is closing in on you, like forcing you to move and stuff. And most of the matches go like 30, 40 minutes where you think you're doing really well. You haven't fired a single shot because you're just trying to like get around and get resources. And then within 1 second, you and all your friends get just utterly assassinated, and somehow it's the coolest, funnest thing ever. So I've been playing a ton of that. And then Breath of the Wild.
Just the best.
Yeah.
We've been talking quite a lot about that.
It is
like
the best.
It might actually be the best, we were saying off camera. Like, it is, as soon as you start playing, I think you've not finished it. I finished it last weekend just because I put so much time into it. I felt really like a really negligent Link that I'd done everything and yet I still wasn't saving Zelda. I felt really bad about it, so I was collecting 10 frogs. So I was like, I've got to actually help her now.
Someone needs crickets. Yeah,
exactly.
I feel like you're getting sidetracked, Link. So I had to go help finish it. But like, it was an amazing game.
Yeah, I'm so nervous to say this because it sounds like hyperbole, but it might be the best game ever made. That's how good that game is.
Yeah, I don't think many people who've put a lot of time into it would disagree with you.
It's kind of nuts, isn't it? And it's like, and it comes amongst so many other good things. Like, I got my fifth ending in Nier Automata the other day.
Oh, nice.
I barely ever play a game through twice, and because of the structure of that game, I kept having to do it. I just got to the point where I was like, I can't believe how many good things are coming out right now. This was on the back burner, and it's one of the best games I've played in years. It's nuts.
But to bring the conversation back to Overwatch, we're just going to ask you a bunch of questions about how you play Overwatch. And we were wondering, do you have a main at all? Because I usually play Mei quite a lot, and I've been getting into Zarya. You play a lot of Roadhog, Joe.
Yeah.
Do you have someone, or do you feel bad as like, because you've had a hand in their creation, that they're all your children?
I was going to say,
they do all feel like part of me. I love all of our heroes, and I try to play all of the heroes, so I have perspective on all of mm-hmm. them. Because of the group that I play with, like I play with similar people as frequently as possible. We naturally fall into roles, so I tend to fall more into the tank role. So I play much more of the tanks than anything else.
Good call.
Leadership role?
I wouldn't call it leadership. So when we play in quick play, we don't join team chat. Mm-hmm. So we just stay in party chat. And then I talk a lot. Like I like to call, the shots a lot in terms of, who's where. We're getting flanked, attack, we're moving forward. But when we play in comp, I can't talk in team chat because it's weird. Like, not too many people know who I am, but some of our players do. And it gets super weird super fast.
Do they think it's you, or do they think it's you, someone doing an impression of you?
They think it's me. They say, they say, hey, you sound just like Jeff Kaplan. And then I say, I don't know who that is. And then they'll say, that's the guy from the developer updates. And what they really mean is Dino Flash videos making fun of me. And that's who they think. And then I'll just say, I don't know who that is. I've never seen this. And then I'll just stop talking the whole time.
That's like the people who play with, is it Matthew Mercer who does McCree?
Yes.
Yeah. When he does those streams where he's playing in the role of McCree.
It's so awesome.
It's an extra strange version of that. One more abstraction to go, that's the guy that made this game.
Is there any character that you're particularly not very good at?
Yeah, Genji.
We knew you'd say Genji.
Yeah, I can't.
It's so hard. I've been trying for months now.
And what's weird is, for me, I'm not stupid about Overwatch. So I understand how the game works. And I understand the combo and the order that the buttons need to be pressed to successfully play Genji. Mm. I just turn to mush. I cannot do it. I watch these Genjis who play against me, and they're amazing. Like, they get in, they get out, they dash. They're resetting their dash on every kill. They seem to know when everybody's at just the right health to do the dash and the melee. They do amazing wall climbs and the deflex. For me, it's like my brain goes to mush. I dash in, I press E. The guy looks at me for 2 seconds. E goes down, and they shoot me in the head, and I'm dead. And then my team yells at me to get off Genji.
That's pretty much my experience. Yeah. I've tried remapping buttons as well, thinking that I might put the jump on a shoulder button because we play on PS4 mainly. Mm. That still hasn't helped me much.
Well, it's that strange thing of lots of characters kind of require a situational awareness, whereas Genji just requires like mastery in all moments, like jumping exactly the right way and climbing. Whenever I'm playing him, I just forget one piece of his arsenal, so I won't climb walls or I won't reflect because I'm just so overwhelmed by every other bit of it. And then I play someone who's amazing at it, and it's terrifying.
I know, it's very I'm very envious of good Genjis.
It's like an art. When I watch good Genji players, it's like an art form to me. I feel like, wow, that person's amazing at ballet or painting or something. And I'm like, oh, they're amazing at Genji. And,
it's the same way I feel about a Lucio who can wall ride properly. Yeah. Like, it's nuts. I really enjoy playing Lucio, but I do not play him to a level where I could do any of that. It's nuts.
This is a very nerdy question, but do you have a favorite spray? So probably by the time this goes live, we might have a video on IGN where you critique the IGN team's Overwatch play. And you probably saw that we're a big fan of a spray that we've taken to be called, like, calling the boy.
Yes.
We call it Timmy.
Timmy. Yes. We call him the boy. Like, at the start of every match, we say, put the boy down. I think I like his can-do attitude, because even though he's got a broken arm, he still wants to punch stuff.
Yeah, and
I
quite
like that spirit. I think
bright,
that sums
optimistic
us up as
future.
Yeah, yeah, do you have a particular spray that you...
I like the Pachamari, the original with the ring around it. Just the original Pachamari. I had unlocked that one in the beta, and that became like the coveted spray that everybody else wished they had, and so that one's always been special to me.
The boy was the strangest one for us, because no, you have to buy it, right? You don't unlock
you
it
can,
for a...
You can unlock it.
You can unlock it, right.
So it's pretty cheap to buy.
Well, that's it. Yeah. So because one day, I think it was Rory, just put had it and put it down and was like, I don't know where this came from. And everyone else just went... That's great. Let's all have that.
I think he put it down on a car or something, so that the boy's face was like stretched, or like he was inside the car.
Yeah. So our favorite one at the moment is after the Numbani rework in the spawn for the attackers, putting it so his head fits perfectly over one of the
OR bots.
One bots.
Yeah.
You just
that
make
fits
it look
his
like
personality well.
It has a creepy little Timmy face on it. It's brilliant.
We were also wondering which character you've got a golden gun for, or have you cheated and given yourself golden guns for every character?
No, I would never cheese it. So the first character that I got a golden weapon for was Rhine with the hammer.
Oh, it's such a good looking one.
It's just amazing. Like, if you want to cover surface area, that's the weapon to go with. The problem is I like the Baldric skin. The Griefheart. So there's Baldric, yes, which is the epic-looking Eichenwald one, and then Griefheart is the overgrown one. And I love the Griefheart one, but that one, it kind of tones down the gold on it.
Does it?
So,
I had no idea. Yeah,
so it's tarnished.
It's less blingy.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the kind of implication of the Griefheart skin is quite strange, because isn't that the overgrown Baldric armor that you're trying to save the Eichenwald map?
What you're doing is thinking about the story too much.
I see.
Yeah, it's always your problem, Joe.
I know. I just
because where this leads is you're going to ask why is there like Widowmaker and Tracer on the same team?
Well, Widowmaker fighting a Widowmaker. Yeah, parallel realities intersecting.
To be honest, I just like the idea of Reinhardt sort of shaking the bones out of this old armor and putting it on for himself.
It's got a little bit of a stink, but I'll try it on.
It fits.
Yeah.
So this is actually a very big question. Have you ever quit a game early?
No, I haven't left. I have tilted many times, and I do tilt, and it's actually something that I work on, is getting frustrated and tilting. Like, my brother and I were talking about games and tilting. Tilting's the phrase that we use for like getting pissed, and then you get kind of pissy, and that's what leads to people doing things like leaving.
Yeah, I'm very tilty.
So I wouldn't leave. Like, that's not in my nature to leave. And it's weird because my brother and I were talking about Hearthstone, and he said it's the game that frustrates him the most, that he actually hurt his hand because he was punching his iPad so hard trying to break the screen. And I'm like, I've never been upset at Hearthstone. Like, it's so weird. Like, that game has never frustrated. I've never had the buttons pressed. But Overwatch frustrates me sometimes. And I think a lot of it is because I pay attention to the game a lot. I watch a lot of the pro scene. I know the mechanics of the game.
That's good. It's probably useful.
And it's like sort of required for my job, but it's also like my passion. And so I get frustrated with myself that I'm not able to execute. Like,
you know what should be doing.
I feel like I know what should be happening right now, but then I can't do it, or my team can't do it, and I get frustrated. So I used to tilt a lot more than I do now, and it's something I actually work on. But what I would do back when I would tilt more, besides get grumpy, what I would do is I would just sort of switch to a hero at that point. That was my version of leaving. Like, let's say I was the team's mercy and the only support or whatever. And then, like, we're in the, like, last 2 minutes and everybody's just yelling at each other and pissed. I'm like, okay, it's Genji time. And I told you guys earlier how good of a Genji I am. And it's like, all right, now you've
Almost worse than leaving somehow. Yeah. The idea of just being the wrong one.
It's the equivalent of putting salt in the wound. Yeah. The thing that really annoys me is when you're doing carrot select and people are flashing Reinhardt or Mercy. And it's just like,
you just sit there.
Well, you know where the character is if you want to pick it.
That's
the thing that really gets to me. Have you ever shouted at an employee for not being on the payload?
Probably, yeah. Like, if anything... I think I tilt harder at work than I do even just playing casually, because I have this feeling of like, you guys made the game, you know better, get on the payload. What's wrong with you?
That's a really unusual problem.
But I am working through these issues. It is an issue. Like, we all have these like frustration issues, and I think a lot of it just comes down to like anger management and being zen, because it's not cool. Like, I can fully recognize any form of sort of frustrated outrage.
You're suddenly aware, like, when you're doing it.
Yeah. And it's like, wow, I'm just being a jerk. And like, here, I think about it a lot, like, if you went to the movie theater and like, there's this whole room full of people who just want an entertainment experience. Like, you'd never like look at them and, you know, why don't you eat the goddamn popcorn and enjoy the end of the movie? But like, why are we doing this to each other in Overwatch? And why is it okay?
I've got this brilliant video on my phone of when we did placement matches for the recent season.
Do we have to bring this up?
Yes, we do.
Did you have a moment?
I captured the end screen of where we got our rating, and it came up. So we had like a really mixed game. We were probably like 6-4 or something like that. A very up and down game. And Joe sits opposite me at work, so we have TVs in the way, so I can't see him. And I'm just filming my screen as gold comes up, and you hear one moment there's a beat, controller goes smashing down, and fuck! And I think we stopped playing there.
What's wrong with gold?
Oh no, it's perfect. It was fine.
We just had high hopes because we came in to do them together. We had a full team of six. We had a Mercy. We had a Reinhardt. We thought we were all sorted.
It was more because in the season before, I got to something like 7 points off of platinum and didn't make it. And dropped and dropped. I had the worst Christmas. Overwatch ruined my Christmas, Jeff.
That's what we tried to do.
Yeah. And I was just like, I was so sure we were going to do it. We'd been so prepared. We will. We're closer than... Oh, you've already done it.
I've done it without you, but...
Yeah, that's true. I'll get there.
So is there anything in the game that when you see someone else doing that particularly annoys you or makes you tilt?
That annoys... Well, I don't like... this. I don't think this is what you're asking, but I don't like when people are mean to each other. And I think there's a lot of like weird meanness in the game that's totally unnecessary. Like, an example is a lot of people will instantly jump on each other for the heroes they pick. Mm. You know, I had a competitive match the other day where the first thing, like, before I could load into the match, somebody's locked in on Hanzo. And, you know, it instantly seems to, like, trigger everybody on our team. Well, fast forward to during the match, that Hanzo was amazing for us.
Happens so often.
Best player on our team. We won the match easily. Like, it was, we were playing King's Row, one attack defend. This guy was a Hanzo main. And he was stellar. Like, I'm watching the kill feed and it's just Hanzo. And I'm thinking to myself, why did we have to have that moment where somebody's talking smack on the guy and giving him a hard time? Like, he put his money where his mouth is. Just because the collective internet has decided that one of the characters shouldn't be played doesn't mean that that's true. And if somebody pulls it off. So I think just that unnecessary meanness, that gets to me more than anything.
I think it's like with certain characters, it's like hard to tell how they're doing. Like, if you're playing, like, it's very obvious if the Reinhardt is doing well because you can see he's making literal progress in front of you. And we've like sometimes had that in the past where you'll call out a character on your team and then you look and they're on fire.
Yeah, and they're just amazing. Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay, fair play.
And they missed that one shot that I was watching.
Yeah.
We're experimenting with something right now that I think players will be really interested in. We're experimenting with adding assists to the kill feed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's something we've wanted for a while. It's something the players have talked about on the forums for a while, suggesting, and we're experimenting with it right now. And the designer who's working on it is a guy named Jeremy Craig. And his design philosophy was really interesting because I asked, you know, I'm like, well, what's going to trigger an assist? Because if you're not careful, like everything in the kill feed is going to show
just
up.
Raining.
And he's like, I don't want to count damage at all. And, you know, I don't know. We're still playing around with it. I don't know. Maybe someday we will count damage. But right now, we have it so that, like, crowd control abilities, you know, like if Mei has somebody frozen or if Reinhardt has somebody earth shattered, you know, anything that removes your control from you, Junkrat's trap is on you. That will trigger an assist, or things like Mercy damage boosting you, or Zenyatta Discord Orb. And the really interesting thing about it is we played a match, we were testing the new kill feed. Another one of our designers, Scott Mercer, was playing Zenyatta. And I was just watching over Jeremy's shoulder as he was testing the kill feed. I didn't get into that match. And I was just watching, you know, I'm staring at the kill feed. And I'm like, man, Scott's having an amazing game, because you're just watching the assist and you're suddenly realizing, like, I think like a Zenyatta is a great example of what you're talking about, that sometimes there can be that guy who's just contributing way more than you realize. And the game doesn't always tell you that. So it's easy to get grumpy to other, like, well, what's Zenyatta doing on our team? You know, you start to see all those assists pop up in the kill feed, and you realize like every single kill is because he has Discord on somebody.
Yeah,
like
we play Dale or Zenyatta, who you saw earlier, at the end of every match, he'll get the card
offensive
for offensive assist every single time.
I really think you would have thought a lot more of my play as Orisa earlier if there was an assist feed. So I really want you to add that soon.
I thought you developed new techniques that have never been seen before. Like the Fortify Genji thing was brilliant.
See, the worst thing about this...
The worst thing about this is this. Right, okay.
So, yeah, when we asked you, is there anything that really annoys you about watching a teammate? Mine is... playing against a Genji and watching someone empty so many rounds into
shoot into the Genji
just because he's not looking at them. They're like, oh, someone else will deal with it, and I'm always the person that gets killed. Unfortunately, when I was playing Orisa, you really picked up on the fact that
and
I fired
that you,
so many
the
rounds.
The fact that you've anatomized that is going to be very good for the rest of us on the team.
I'm so angry.
I just
show
that to the work dynamic.
Every time he calls out the Pharaoh or the Mei icicles coming back at you, you can just play that.
Don't point out specific icicles. actually, I wanted to go back. The Hanzo main thing. I'm assuming you saw when there was a billboard during the presidential election that said Trump is a Hanzo main.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
That was... Okay, so without getting political...
Of course.
Yeah,
we'd never like to.
Or making any statement about Hanzo mains. Mm. I don't want to go there either.
That's even more political.
Yeah, I would pay more for that than talking smack on my president. I was fascinated that what was interesting about that moment is that realizing that Overwatch had permeated culture enough that in a major American election, somehow like Hanzo is being discussed as part of it. So there was something really fascinating about that, and it made me in a weird way excited for gamers that. You know, gaming used to be this thing that was considered, you know, when I was growing up, my generation was looked at as like, you're playing with your toy, you'll grow out of it someday, you'll be done with it. And I think, you know, we really believed that gaming was the future entertainment medium that was going to sort of capture the world, and it really has. And seeing the game get referenced during the election kind of made me realize that one, it was cool that the game Overwatch had reached that it was part of the conversation. But even more to me was that gamers are prolific enough and influential enough as a community, you know, the collective gaming community, not just the Overwatch gaming community, that were a part of the discussion. Hmm. And I thought that was really cool.
Has Overwatch been used in a sitcom yet? And if so, did they use the right controllers? 'Cause you know, they always use the wrong ones.
I cannot talk about that.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that.
Interesting.
Oh, wow.
News.
do you want to ask about the...
I will absolutely do that. So I think it's really... It's a really interesting time at the moment, because obviously the whole games with service thing is sort of a bit trite at this point. But there's something really interesting to me about the difference in development between... or in development processes between making a game for the first time and releasing that game, which is something that we've seen over the years,
and this relatively new thing of upkeeping a game and adding new things to it, which is something I think most people agree you do very well. Obviously, coming into the second year of Overwatch, how have your sort of philosophies towards that changed? Are you approaching development differently? Have you sort of streamlined how you make things? Where is Overwatch at now in a development sense?
I think it's really like a great question, because the hardest thing for a team, like Overwatch is the first game that my team has made together as a group. Mm. Like obviously, a lot of us have shipped other games at Blizzard or other companies, so we had that experience. But it's unique every time your team ships a game, and that's a really hard thing to do. It's kind of like a giant hurdle to get over. And then the next immediate hurdle after that is, how do you transition to be a service? Mm. And it's a hard mindset for people, because you know, just making the game is one thing. You're building a lot of technology from scratch. It's kind of like standing up this big monolithic thing. But games as a service is it's best described as a runaway train. Mm. Like that thing's going. The players are here. You can either put more track in front of the train, or that thing's just gonna, you know, go flying into whatever canyon comes next. And you know, that's why you see games fail, is people, they don't keep their audience, you know, playing and happy and recognize what the audience needs. And it's really hard to do. The thing that I've been really proud of that we've been able to get better at over time, and we're still not perfect and there's still room for growth here, is really there's internal stuff that you guys aren't seeing about how we have our patch pipeline sort of stacked up, and they're sort of cascading at this point. Mm-hmm. So everything's lined up. Like I think we're working on every patch through July at this point.
Nice.
And that's like one a month. So that's a lot to keep in your head. Mm. And we've gotten better at that. It used to kind of be like, well, what's the next patch? What's the next patch? And
so
at this point,
a bit of a cushion.
Yeah, actually, that's not even true. We are through August at this point.
Wow.
So that's been pretty cool. But the part that I'm really proud of the team is that we've been able to, for the most part, get the console and PC patches to be synchronized, which was really difficult for us. We're, you know, traditionally a PC company. Mm. It was great getting Reaper of Souls onto the console platforms. Mm. And then having the simultaneous release of Overwatch on three platforms was a really big deal for us. But our expertise was in PC gaming, where we run the service and we're going to update whenever we want. And sort of taking a step back and learning, like, okay, there are very good reasons why Sony and Microsoft have these sort of certification processes in place. Like, it's not just arbitrary and bureaucratic. It's all about quality control and making sure that their players have the highest level quality experience. Mm. But how do we integrate with that in a way that allows us to also deliver stuff at the pace that we want? So that was probably one of the biggest challenges, but also one of the things that I'm really happy that the team has gotten better at.
You guys have always, sorry.
No, you go for it.
Well, like you guys have always done, speaking of your sort of the cascading sort of updates or patch sort of structure that you've built, you guys have always had sort of a drop, like a content drop a month, which I think has been widely appreciated, apart from people who want, you know, MOBA style 30 more characters every year or something. Is that something you're looking to keep up with in year two as well? Do you still see it as sort of one new thing to kind of look forward to every month or month or so?
We have so much that we want to deliver to the players that, and there's nothing that's sort of more exciting for us than finally realizing all of our dreams for this game. You know, anytime you make a game, it doesn't matter what the business model is, you always have much more in your mind than ever makes it all the way to the player. Mm. But the awesome thing about a game like a World of Warcraft or a Hearthstone or Heroes of the Storm or Overwatch is that you get to keep delivering this stuff. So we love doing it. The monthly cadence feels about as fast as we can really go with maintaining quality. Mm. We could probably go faster, weirdly, if we dipped on the quality. I don't think we can make less content and have it happen correctly. Or we could get a couple patches out really fast and then have some sort of gap. So we'd rather be consistent and have high quality. The thing that I've been thinking the most about recently is the hero updates. I know that players want, you know, lots of heroes. Mm. I don't know if too many heroes is such a good thing for Overwatch.
Yep. Yeah.
In terms of balance, in terms of players' just affinity for the characters. Like, and I know it sounds cheesy to talk about the lore stuff, but I want every player to know who every character is and what their backstory is and to actually care about them.
Yeah, because like, I guess if you add too many, like, then you start having to retrofit them into the story, because where did they exist before if they were never even conceived of?
Like, well, and that idea of like kind of going, where does that person, is that person with that person? Yeah. Or like,
it gets you get in the corner. And it seems like a lot in the first year, we were talking about this, about Overwatch was establishing the world, introducing to all these characters, kind of a bit more like a history, like this is what used to be the case. And you've made a point repeatedly about Orisa being the first new hero, like a contemporary hero. Is it like the future, the next year of Overwatch, going to be more about telling the ongoing story rather than kind of retrospective?
I think it's a mix. I think because Overwatch is new as an intellectual property, we haven't explained enough of any of the eras to our players yet. Mm. So the main eras are the Omnic Crisis. That's when and why Overwatch was formed. And in the Overwatch timeline, that was 30 years ago. Then we've got what we call the golden years of Overwatch, which is about, you know, 7 to 10 years ago is this golden years. That's when the Omnic Crisis is resolved, but then Overwatch is still needed and still doing good things across the globe. And really growing in power. And that's when you've got like newer members like Tracer and Genji are starting to join the ranks. And then obviously like whatever sort of conflict and turmoil happened to overturn Overwatch, which we will explore someday, happened. And then Overwatch went into the disbanded period, which is where we're at now. And I don't even know if most Overwatch players know that those three periods exist. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a lot of really dedicated fans who pay attention to all of the lore and are seeking more, but I think we kind of owe it to our players to explore the whole timeline a lot more and kind of catch everybody up to speed. And obviously we want to add new people in the future and keep pushing the game storyline further in the future, but I think we owe it to the players to tell them a little bit more about that past as well.
Well, it's super interesting to have a new game that isn't about, or isn't all about, here is an event that you are at the center of and you're going to play through, which is, you know, the classic narrative. It's kind of being put in a situation going, oh, by the way, all this stuff happened as well, and you're going to learn about that. That's really cool, and that's part of what makes me enjoy the lore quite as much as I do.
I think we might be running out of time, so I think we have time for one more question.
Is that the question?
Yeah, I think that is the question.
Oh, no. You guys make me nervous.
We want to know... We don't want to know any details, or, you know, we're not digging or anything. We just want to know, have you met Terry Crews when he came?
He's sleeping around your office. Well,
yeah, you've really got
to. He was there and everybody was so excited, and I saw his picture at the front of our suite. I did not get to meet him. And I was super bummed because I think that would have been the coolest thing ever. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jeff.
Yeah, it's been amazing.
Thank you, guys.
With all our stuff and silly questions. Thank you for making Overwatch.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
Good podcast.
He's brilliant.
Sorry, I was taking a drink. I was drinking to him.
He's just refreshing yourself after all that, Jeff.
He's a delicious man.
Yeah, I was a bit embarrassed at the end. I kind of just go, oh, thank you for making Overwatch like a fucking loser.
Man, there's one bit right at the start, and I bet people will have been annoyed by this, where I just start talking, like, gobbing off about Nier Automata for ages, because I got all flustered and was like, oh, I just want to join in the conversation. I'm going to talk about a game I liked. And
just I did make Overwatch.
We were just talking about all the games we liked.
Since we recorded that, congratulations on your BAFTA best multiplayer.
Like,
screwed out of design.
I mean, we love Inside.
But I wouldn't say the design award.
No, not
of awards for that game, absolutely, but not design. But yeah, like, it's just really, really nice and knowledgeable.
We'd heard rumors before he came in about how all those game dev developer updates were like one take, and he just does them off the cuff. Yeah. And we kind of went,
Yeah, it's probably true.
Yeah.
Just speaking to that man, at any time, he just has an interesting thing to say.
Yeah,
out of
I would
nowhere.
Just say, like he came in for like 2 hours into our office in London, yeah. And if you kind of just listen to the IGN podcast, we've got some amazing videos with Jeff coming out over the next few weeks. Yeah. By the time this podcast goes live, actually one will be on the site where he watches a game of us playing Overwatch and basically shoutcasts over the entire thing.
Yeah.
And you can see our reactions Gogglebox style to him critiquing our play on Eichenwald.
Yeah.
Then we've also got him doing a massive Easter egg feature about all the characters.
I can't
and then
see that,
finally, yeah. We've got him... kind of reading some IGN comments and responding to them in inimitable Jeff fashion.
Yeah, it's amazing. That critique video is hard to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. He really goes to town on you.
He fucking hates it. I'm like playing a new character. I was trying to like show off for him.
Yeah. You get an absolute pasty.
I think we even talk about it in that podcast.
I actually didn't realise that he critiques you twice.
Oh yeah, I'm the only person he rewinds on. He rewinds me. Jeff!
The bit in thing, we won't spoil it, but there's a bit where he talks about Genji in particular in that video, which is fucking brilliant.
Oh, it's so
funny.
Yeah,
definitely, if you like Overwatch, if you like Jeff Kaplan, like we like him,
yeah.
Go check out those videos because they are very good.
No one likes Jeff like we like Jeff.
All right, he's never coming in again now, is he? That is weird.
Creepy fucker.
Joe didn't have his trousers on under the table in that.
Oh, Joe.
Oh. They just came off without me touching them. They just slipped
Jeff,
out.
Now my pants are chafing me. We haven't just been doing Jeff though.
Nope.
What else have you been doing?
I went to look at a showcase of PlayStation VR games.
Trousers on this time, hopefully.
Yeah, mostly. Right. Someone took them down. Someone pantsed me while I was playing VR
games.
You got
snake pass, lads.
PSVR, is that still a thing?
I mean, it should be.
I hope so.
I don't know. I hope so, because I'm going to write about some of this.
What do you see?
I played a few games. Actually, the interesting thing was it's a showcase for what PSVR can be,
right,
aside from games. So they had like 360 YouTube videos, a hat, a very fashionable eyewear.
Sleeping mask. Take on planes.
It's just like a one section with just loads of different googly eyes on it. It's like a mask.
Yep.
Could be a mask. I don't know. What do you want?
Halloween.
Baby holder.
Go as Tron.
Baby cup.
Yeah. Baby cup.
Yeah, do you know a couple of different babies?
Come on, PSVR Des, pull your fingers out.
But there was like 360 YouTube videos, so I watched the new Gorillaz music video in VR.
What? So it doesn't have that support yet.
It's actually really impressive. So you're like flying through space.
So that's not been a supported until now.
It's going
to be a future update to the YouTube app on PS4.
It has been supported, but the quality of stuff going out was too low,
right,
so they never really showed it off because they were like,
"Do they mean like
dangerous
quality in terms of like resolution shit, or actual
in terms of like
people were making guff?"
Well, kind of both, as far as I could tell. Guy explaining it was like some of them just made you throw up.
Right.
So, but like, there's some really interesting stuff on there. There's like skydiving in VR,
and
like just all sorts of things. It's
I like
really
the
cool.
Gorillaz thing. That sounds really good.
Gorillaz thing's amazing. It's like a big psychedelic journey through a haunted house.
You know they're gonna have a TV, their own TV show.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I hate their voices though. Whenever they actually speak.
It's a bit late.
Is it a bit late?
They got a new album out. The new songs for the new album.
Oh yeah.
Fucking
very good.
Amazing as well.
So I saw that. I watched David Attenborough's First Life, which is where you travel through the bottom of the sea whilst the first life in the world.
The bottom of David Attenborough.
David Attenborough's First Life. Like, it's all his previous incarnations. This is when he was a nematode worm. Yeah. It's a boring series. It gets better in the Regency period as a lady.
Liked it. Wait, it's actually...
Are you in control of David Attenborough?
No.
No one is, baby.
It's not as impressive as I thought it was going to be, and it would have been more impressive if like a trilobite turned around and had his face on it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a trilobite, I'm the most specious guy. So I watched that was vaguely underwhelming.
Do you think trilobites have got a chip on their shoulder because everything around them has evolved and changed, and they like got it right 400 million years ago? Baby,
we're fine, baby.
They've died out now. There's only the little ones we keep.
They're around for a while.
Yeah,
they were like, we didn't have to change, and then hubris maybe.
Dead. Now they're just in little tanks with sea monkeys. Idiots.
Dave Attenborough. Well, was there any games?
Getting off track. So I played a game called The Persistence, which I really want to play with all of us, which is a sci-fi horror game, sort of a roguelike. So every time you die, you respawn as a new person and try and go through the same. And I think it changes each time, but go through this sort of ship full of mutated bastards over and over again.
And each time you collect like stem cells to improve your genes, you're being controlled by this mad computer. Ooh. But the twist is that up to four people can be looking at the map on tablets and Ooh. Affecting the world around
I
you.
I love like, that asymmetrical gameplay.
Oh my god! Good. Now, obviously, asymmetrical gameplay keeps coming back, and no one ever buys the fucking thing. And yeah. coupled with VR, which no one's bought as well, might
bits,
be a tough
it?
Sell. But it is really good when you do it. So they had a really smart thing, which is everyone who played for the first time played in VR.
Okay.
Then when they got out of VR, they played on the same game on the tablet against the person who was behind them in the queue. So right. you're just fucking up the person after you. So you Sounds can like good. Open doors or like lure enemies into them. But then there's this like board game aspect of different players get given different objectives. So okay. someone's want to be helping the player. Ah. Someone's want to be hindering them. Yeah. Sometimes it's half and half. And it's really smart.
It's a better than our Fable game.
Well, oh, it's a different thing.
Fable. Didn't like that.
No, quite like
you know the Fable 3.
The one with the legends.
Tab, yeah, legends,
just a random say, yeah.
villain.
Yeah. It's better than Fable 3.
Because that's shite, wasn't it?
Like, you always use that as your like your
benchmark.
Yeah,
Fable 2.
You know how much Gav likes Fable 2. He's always got.
We're
going
to do that as a new like feature, like graphics comparisons. Every game, Gav, Fable 2.
Comparing Watch Dogs yeah. to Fable 2.
The opening's quite different.
Just a picture of you in front of a TV, just going.
Not the same.
You know what would be a good name for that game? It's roguelike, is it?
With, it is, yeah.
David Attenborough's first life.
Nice, very good. but the best thing I played, and I want to—I'm going to probably write a feature about this. It's a game called Static, which is by the people who make or are making Little Nightmares,
really,
which we're super into.
Oh,
and it's coming out in the same week. That's their first two games.
They like they had holiday book, didn't they?
For like yeah. the
cheaper going in term time.
Yeah, for like the first for like the last 15 years, all they've done is other people's projects, and they release two games at once. It seems like a really
Pace
weird thing to
lads.
Do.
Yeah. It's a marathon, not
that,
a sprint.
That does feel. Shit.
Either way.
Might be good though.
Static is the game. Static's a game in which every level is you wake up in a different room with this doctor who's got like a mosaiced out face, like he's a criminal on TV, and he speaks to you in cryptic language and is kind of making fun of you.
Yeah.
And each level you have this sort of weird analog technology puzzle box stuck to your hands, which in real life is your PS4 controller, so you can turn it around Ooh. And look at the puzzle box. But it essentially means that it's remapping the controls every time you play.
Okay.
So each level is a completely different set of things. And you just have to learn how this puzzle box works first, then work out how to get it off your hands. And it's so, horrible. So smart.
Oh, yeah. I played, me and Powers played that.
I think
that,
you played it at PSX.
PSX. Yeah, that's really weird. Good? Yeah, like the guy was, had 15 minutes to get it off my hand and I was freaking out.
Yeah, I don't like that.
It's a bit like,
so
it's like, it's a bit like, it reminded me a bit, it's a while ago since I played, a bit portally.
Yes,
like
it's got
the
something
design, even though the scenario sounds like Saw.
Yeah. So I, yeah, no. So I taught the guy showing us was the guy who wrote that. The story, and he was like, yeah. The first idea was obviously horror, and then we were like, everyone does fucking horror in VR, so yeah. we tried something else, and it's sort of this sci-fi Twin Peaks vibe yeah. where nothing quite makes sense, and you don't know where you are.
You know what? The Hellraiser money didn't come through.
Exactly.
It reminds me.
Pinhead's check didn't clear.
It also reminds me of a Frick. Game that I used to play called Edward Ciderhands.
And I know Edward Ciderhands.
Essentially, you get two massive flagons of cider in each hand. They're taped to each hand, and you can't use your hands until you drink the cider.
I've played Amy Winehands.
Yeah, Amy Winehands, exactly the same.
It's dangerous. We also, there was also the
one,
beer.
One. Don't slow it down.
Yeah.
The Beer Lebowski was the other one. I don't know. It's not useful. It's nothing to do with hands.
We should do that.
Just do that in VR.
I mean, that's essentially what it is.
Yeah.
Copy a copy it.
Well, coffee. I'm glad Static's interesting to you.
Just thinking about drinking a fuckload of cider now. So well done, Static.
It's Grumpy King.
No, that sounds really good.
Do you refer to getting boozed up as your virtual reality?
Yeah,
that's, you know that's reality for everyone else.
Yeah, basically, it's the first time I played a VR game where I was like, I could play that for 10 hours.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I want that to be a full length game, and it will be in April.
Amazing.
24th, I think.
What was that the best thing?
That was the best thing.
That was.
I didn't
best
get
thing.
To play Farpoint. Which okay. is apparently good.
Oh, is that the third person one that we're walking from behind?
No, that's the first person shooter with it's sort of Starship Troopers-y.
All right.
And I did play one called Star Blood Arena, where I watched another games journalist play for 5 minutes and have to take his hat off and like run away because he was going to be sick.
Would you
be crazy? Oh, we played Eve.
One of the fanny websites.
Yes, it was. That's why I'm not naming him.
I felt a bit queasy playing Eve Valkyrie the other day as well.
That's because it's not very good, though, I think.
Yeah.
Like, Like gun, like they've got another one called Gun
spinning around this.
We'll talk about another. Awesome. That sounds very good. Do you know what else is very good?
No.
We're breezing through this because we've got to go somewhere. Do you know what else is very good? The bloody Thor 3 trailer.
Oh my God.
Yeah. We watched it yesterday and it was a really funny moment. If you haven't watched it, go watch it. But there's a really funny moment in it, basically, where Thor sees the Hulk coming towards him and he just shouts out, "Yes!" And we got to the same point.
It was so weird. We were watching exactly in sync by accident.
And we both shouted out "yes" before Thor shouted out "yes." As soon as he comes through, I was like, "Yes!" It looks awesome.
He's a friend from work.
I think they've realised, like, Chris plays with strengths. He's a really funny dude.
Very funny. Chris Hemsworth.
Like, you watched Vacation the other day.
Yeah.
He's really funny in that. Like, he's very funny.
Also, he's the funniest thing in Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Like, he gets a lot of the best lines in Ghostbusters, and they all fucking land.
He's got good timing,
yeah. Yeah.
Well, he's also, like, even in Age of Ultron, which was a very... like dour movie.
Yeah.
He was the fun bit.
Yeah.
That was really good.
I know this is like funny bits, but I'm glad it's like a big U-turn from the Dark World, which is just the most tedious, humorless.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Boring of all the Marvel movies, I think.
I think they kind of realized with Guardians, they've just gone, right, we could play all this like weird mystical shit straight. And we could probably do an alright job, but if we do it a little bit more fun, it's going to be a better
film. I think that was a bit of a turn from the first Thor movie. Thor in the first one had more colour, more vibrancy, isn't it? Like the Rainbow Bridge is full on Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah.
So I think that the Guardians took cues from that. Yeah. So it's easy to say that it's all from the Guardians.
No, it's definitely
an influence because that all has to match up at some point.
Yeah.
But the first Thor is way more lively.
It's quite funny as well.
Yeah, that's it. Everyone, I keep seeing people being like, "Oh, I hated the first two Thor movies." And I thought Thor 1 was like
really, really
pretty good.
Yeah, and this one's all right.
Had the best vision of any Marvel movie at that point. Like,
it was almost the trickiest one to pull off as well.
Yes.
Yeah. To like quickly table all that crazy stuff.
It was also the first time they got like a weird director in, wasn't it?
Kenneth Branagh. Yeah.
Branagh. That's amazing.
Just like he just crammed it full of Dutch angles. Fucking loves a Dutch angle.
It's got a good score that. Like, not a lot of the Marvel movies have good scores or memorable scores, but it's Patrick Doyle, who does a lot of Kenneth Branagh films.
Okay,
it's really regal. Like, the bit where... Yeah. Is it the Devastator?
Yeah.
Who kills him, and you think Thor is dead.
Yeah.
And then the hammer just goes flying through the air to him, and he just catches it. That's an amazing moment in those Marvel movies.
I really want to rewatch that moment.
And the suit just, like, emerges around him.
Yeah.
But yeah, this trailer looks ace.
Oh, it's very good.
It's properly...
Best part on the trailer, though, Skuck's Life graffiti in the background.
There is Skuck's Life graffiti.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
So that's from Hunt for the Wilder People, if you haven't seen it. If you haven't seen that, go watch that right now.
That's now Thor homework, which is brilliant.
And What We Do in the Shadows.
What We Do in the Shadows. I watched it on the flight back from Iceland, because it's just so funny. And
I've watched that on loads of planes in the last year or so. It's so good.
When I first watched that, I watched it 3 times in 3 days. I saw it, then I showed my family it, then I showed my ex it, and was like, "Yeah, well, I'm just going to keep watching this forever." That was it. That was the night.
I've still not seen his first film, Boy, which is supposed to be really good.
Yeah, I've never seen Boy.
We should watch that.
Yeah.
Not a fan of Eagle versus Shark, particularly.
Direct that as well.
Yeah. I quite like that, but that was around the time there was loads of films like that was coming
very
out.
Napoleon Dynamite, like that time.
Whereas I think he's kind of evolved from that now, and he does actual jokes.
Yes,
which is really good. But yeah, Skuck's Life in the background, that's awesome.
I can't wait till we get to interview him for Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I might be a bit overwhelming, actually.
You just touch him. Can we get him in? Be like, okay.
What's your pitch? Well, I mean, I'm just going to wank him off. Is that right? You can't do that to a Marvel director.
I bloody can.
Get him blacklisted from every major company we work with because we keep wanking off the guys in charge.
But what a way to go out, though. Like, if you're going to go out wanking someone off.
I think a lot of people who read IGM just go, fair play, IGM.
Yeah.
Well done.
Could there be a lot? To be fair, there'd be a lot of people who would be like,
that's me clapping, not...
Yeah, wanking him off. I think there'd be a lot of people who, if we did do this... And this is going to happen. This is serious now. Let's elevate this idea to the next level. Mm-hmm. If we did do that, I feel like a lot of people would actually be into it.
What, like, just a video of you two?
Wanking him off.
One hand on each.
Do you reckon he's a two-hander?
I don't know.
Thor's a two-hander.
I don't think if
anything. Are we talking about Hemsworth? I thought we were talking about Waititi.
You can wank Waititi off.
I'd love to.
I love Thor. Should we do keyword countdown?
Guys, you know we have a features meeting every Monday, and then we'll email Disney.
I saw a guy who looked and dressed like Taika Waititi on the... Bloody hell, Gavin, what was that?
He was thinking about it.
like Taika Waititi on the tube the other day, and I was really excited, and I was looking at him kind of going... I'm going to take cues from how you dress. You dress really well. And then he got out his phone and opened up his notes app. And I was like crammed right next to him. So I was looking at his phone. He was writing really bad poetry and ideas for things. So he wrote down the words. I watched him write down the words. A song where only the crowd sings the words.
Well, that song's already been written. Angels by Robbie Williams.
Very good, very good.
Very good. Because that just reminded me of something. There's an advert for something that's just called Albert Einstein. You seen this?
Ron Howard's new thing.
That looks like Taika Waititi dressed up as Albert Einstein. Honestly, check out the poster. It looks exactly like it.
I'd love to see him play Albert Einstein.
Because it looks like how he is in Hunt for the Wilder People as the priest a little bit. Like,
that character's so funny.
It's amazing. What's that voice? It's so good.
There's something about like Kiwi voices really tickle me. Yeah. It's so really funny. It got such a good... Well done, then.
Well... Tell you what else is really funny is a game called Keyword Countdown. Keyword Countdown. Time for Keyword Countdown. It's Keyword Countdown. Time for Keyword Countdown. It's Keyword Countdown.
I can't tell whether you were laughing at the idea of Keyword Countdown or at the fact that you had idea what your segue was.
No idea. If you don't know what Keyword Countdown is, IMDb categorise their films via a bunch of crazy keywords. What I've done is taken five films, all connected somehow, and you have to guess what the film is by those keywords.
I don't know what the theme is.
Do you? We'll see.
I don't.
You're not dying, are you, with this cough? It's not like when someone coughs in a sitcom and all the listeners be like, oh, we had that.
It's tickled, like a little tickly thing.
Imagine if we started an underground, like subtextual storyline throughout
the podcast.
Matthew
Wiener's writing it.
Yeah. What if one of us died?
Well, we all will at some point.
But like,
what, during the production of this?
No. But like, what if one of us died while we're all still on the podcast? Not like doing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But like, say if Powers died.
It'd be bad. Yeah.
We'd probably
either put out a special or take a week off.
Is it like that's the thing. Is it like that really shit 2000s film where it's like they try to kill off their roommate because if you kill off your roommate, you get all A's.
Right.
Thing. Mm. If your roommate dies or kills himself. Or themselves, you get all A's. So, like,
well, the thing is,
if Towers died, how long are we getting off for that?
The whole team, do you reckon they'd out? They wouldn't allow off.
I'm waiting for three of you to die because then I get redundancy.
Well, no, but he's one of our best friends. Like, if he died.
He's one of your best friends.
If he died. Well, you're not having time off then. But, like, if Powers died, how much time are we having off? It's probably something to talk about for a bit, I reckon.
I think the circumstances.
That's true, actually. If we watched him die and it was messy, loads of time off.
Yeah. Well, it's like that.
If it's just pneumonia or something.
Like, if he got too close to his Mac Pro fan.
Mm. Well, it's like.
He sucked his hand off. Right. Anyway, it's something else.
Okay. So, film number one.
The film where the guys try and kill their roommates.
I can't remember what that film's called.
I have no idea what that is.
Film number one.
That's a bluff.
Sequel to prequel.
Attack of the Clones.
Ensemble cast.
That's very good.
British actor playing American character.
Trainspotting 2. Trainspotting.
That's not a sequel to a prequel, though, is it?
Shot in the back.
Sequel to a prequel. Godfather Part 2, Godfather Part 3.
Stabbed in the throat.
Ooh, sounds horrible.
Crushed to death.
What? So there's got to be three...
Snorricam.
Excuse me?
Snorricam.
I feel like that should be more distinctive than it is for me.
That's a camera, basically, that's like rigged to the front to be looking at a person.
Like Blair Witch.
Yeah, Snorricam.
Blair Witch. That's not even that.
Hieroglyphics.
Stargate.
Soul Transference.
Oh, X-Men Apocalypse?
Yes, it is. Well done.
Oh, fuck that.
Sorry, I don't want to look at it. What was the third one down? The Scottish accent. I can't remember what you said.
British actor playing American character. Right, yeah. Final
That's every film.
Final clue on that. Giant.
I would never have gotten that.
Yeah.
There's soul transference in that.
Yeah.
In the first 10 minutes. Get your money's worth.
Yeah.
You know how many films I've been in and there's not been one bit of soul transference?
Is that your, like, is that your, you know, the yeah. society that walks out of films after they yeah. say the film title?
Yeah.
Are you that for soul yeah. transference?
But I'm in every film to the end because it's not in any.
Yeah. It's I films. Terminator so 2. Many.
Here we go. Film number 2. 3-word title.
Lord of the...
Directed by several directors.
Oh, the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Film 43.
But what, I tell you what.
Is that a thing?
It's because several implies more than two, and it's two. So I'm live editing.
Fargo.
Directed by several directors.
The Big Lebowski.
Bechdel test passed. Gay pornography. Cross-country trip.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That's four, isn't it?
Beauty pageant.
Little Miss Sunshine.
Well done.
Who are the two directors?
I don't know. I've forgotten their names.
Weird.
5 points to Joe there. Krupa, you've got 2 points.
Bang it.
The other clues. Grandfather-granddaughter relationship. Dead body. Vow of silence. Van.
I haven't watched that film for ages.
Yeah, it's all right, isn't it?
I really liked it.
I so bet there's a lot of hate for that film.
I bet it's unbearably twee now.
Yeah.
Like, if you look back on it, I bet it... Because that was Napoleon Dynamite time as well, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's kind of like...
I think that's like Squid in the Wheel as well. I really... Mm. I got fond memories of Squid in the Wheel, but I reckon if I watched it now, I'd fucking
hate
it.
Yeah, I can see that.
Here we go.
Fickle.
It's come sad now.
Passage of time.
When I watched it, I was like at university going, anything can happen.
It was all ahead of you.
Yeah.
Now.
And then anything
fucked
did.
Fucked it. Absolutely fucked it. All right. Film number 3. Child.
The Golden Child. No way! Yes! Yes!
What the fuck?
Well done, Joe. That's big. That's big.
I haven't seen that since I was about 9.
You know what?
That's a biggie. Though.
I was doing the clues, and I was like, I fucking love The Golden Child. It's so good.
I've never seen it.
It's good, man.
We'll fix that.
Oh, Christ. I've got proper
clues.
Adrenaline.
Clues.
Show me that.
Child. Demon. See, I put child at the top because I was like, no one's getting that.
It's, well, yeah,
it's one of the three words
I know,
in the
but
title.
That's what I mean. That's why I thought no one's definitely getting it because of that. Child. Demon. Prophecy. 1980s. Private detective. Nipples visible through clothing. My favorite.
Classic.
Reluctant hero. Fish out of water. Interracial romance. Chosen one.
That's hard.
Yeah. Well, except for the first one.
Yeah, except for the
That's
first
the thing.
Clip.
I thought maybe like that would put people off, but not enough. 15 points to Joe. Krupa, you got 2.
Krupa, you're right. What's that face?
Thinking face.
Ready?
About what?
Film number 4.
Future.
Third in a trilogy.
Toy Story 3.
1 day time span.
Mm. Oh,
Summer Vacation.
Oh, God, what are those films called?
Hangover 3.
Female frontal nudity.
National Lampoon's Vacation 3.
Is it the Ethan Hawke one?
Reference to Garden of Eden.
Midnight.
Beyond Sunrise. Beyond Sunset.
Beyond Midnight.
Before Midnight.
There you go.
I would like. I would never have gotten it otherwise.
I fucking love those films.
I've never watched them. I really want to.
They're incredible. And I think I watched them all like the kind of right. You don't like them?
I've not seen them.
Oh. I kind of watched them all almost at the right ages as well.
Ah, nice.
Like, which is really good, yeah.
Oh, I can't believe you got 7.
7 points for Krupa there, so 9 points to 15.
Come on.
The other clues now, sorry. Female frontal nudity, reference to Garden of Eden, kissing while having sex, Trojan condom, reference to Balzac, gas party, reference to Luxembourg Gardens, Paris.
What are they called?
Bit like
again?
National Lampoon.
Bit like National Lampoon.
What's it called?
Like
before Sunrise,
Before Sunrise, Before Midnight is the third one.
Had kebab.
And I think Before Sunset or After Sunset is the other one. But yeah, there you go.
I would never have gotten it.
Yeah, they're all mad.
I knew what it was.
They are very good,
though. Which I think makes me the true winner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what's that? 15 points
yep,
to
tell it to
9.
My points, prick.
And also the actual points make you the winner.
Yeah.
Hells.
Here we go then. Final film. In Keyword Countdown. American Abroad. Cleaning a Rifle.
Talented Mr. Ripley.
Latrine.
Apocalypse Now.
Sweat.
Ooh. Forrest Gump.
Ernest Hemingway quote.
Midnight in Paris.
Vomiting.
For Whom the Bell Toll.
Woman Cheating on Man.
God damn it.
Breasts.
Oh, now I'm more distracted.
European vacation.
Fairchild A10 Warthog. Just a fighter jet. That just really
Top Gun.
No, but I like that.
Hot Shots. Hot Shots Part 2.
Final clue. US Marine Corps.
Jarhead?
Yes.
Oh.
Well done, Joe. That's a bit of a shit end to that. To an otherwise amazing one.
I really like the Warthog, though. That's very good.
Yeah, it's good. Fairchild A10 Warthog. For ages, you know, I was late because I was just looking at all the films that had Fairchild A10 Warthogs in. And I was like, guys, I'm going to be 10 minutes.
How many?
Lots. So that's 16 points to Joe, 9 points to Krupa.
Well done.
Well done, guys. That was really good.
Shake hands. It was nice.
Does anybody know what the link is?
Go through them again.
No. Okay. What is it?
All directed by a Jeff.
X-Men Apocalypse. No, but I wish they were. That's too easy. I think that's too easy.
Yeah, of course.
X-Men Apocalypse, Little Miss Sunshine, The Golden Child. What's that one? Before Midnight and Jarhead.
They're all set in places where there's an Overwatch map.
Yes.
Very good.
Very good, Cooper. That's a point for you. Just for funsies.
What are we talking? Hollywood, Iraq.
No.
Temple of Anubis.
Yeah. For.
Well, Egypt.
Yeah.
For Apocalypse.
One. Yeah.
Route 66.
Yes.
Nice.
Miss Sunshine. Yeah. Very good.
Iraq.
Yeah, Iraq's Jarhead.
Well, Arabian Desert. Yeah, for Oasis. Two more. So you got Golden Child.
Oh, Nepal.
Yep. And the Before Midnight one. Before Sunrise, Before Sunset.
Oh, I thought they were all in France.
Sunset. Oh, King's Row?
No.
I thought England. They were all in France. Those.
Germany?
Greece.
Really?
Yes. But well done, Krupa, you get that. That's really good.
Great.
10 points to Krupa, 16 points
Very good
to Joe. Well done. Right, should we do some feedback?
Yeah, boy.
And we'll fuck off.
You're first.
I got this. No Subject from Emma Butterworth. On the last podcast, Daniel mentioned how his daughter had managed to get the hang... What the fuck is this, mate?
That really scared the shit out of me.
Oh. I didn't know about this. On the last podcast, Daniel Robson...
I've blown it.
Our Japanese colleague... He's not Japanese, but he lives in Japan and does IGN Japan. Daniel mentioned how his daughter had managed to get the hang of guiding Link around without walking him off cliffs. This got me thinking about the first game that I remember getting good at, Space Channel 5 on the Dreamcast. I never played that.
Oh, it's good. It's a rhythm action game with a space lady called Ulala.
This started a love of rhythm dance games. One of my proudest purchases was a hard dance mat with pads that lit up when depressed. And also video game soundtracks. What was the first game that really got you, that you really got into, and do you have any favourite soundtracks?
Ooh. First game I really got into. Yeah.
Fuck.
I didn't think about it when I chose it as feedback. I just like the question.
It's going to be Tetris or Pushover.
What's Pushover?
Pushover's like this puzzle game that was sponsored by Quavers.
A lot of games when we grew up were very brand heavy.
Wave Race, sponsored by Fanta.
It was sponsored by Quavers when it was on the... Yeah, it was sponsored by Quavers when it was on the Atari and PC. But then when I think it went to a couple of Nintendo consoles and they fucking axed the Quavers bits from it. But basically, the Quavers dog, what's his name? Johnny Quaver? He's lost all his Quavers. And this ant called Colonel something... Really annoying.
Pushover.
Colonel Pushover. And the annoying thing as well is Pete Donaldson, who listens to this podcast, loves this game as well. And he's actually tweeted me before when I couldn't remember the ant's fucking name.
It's coming again.
So it's coming again. But yeah, you basically had to push over dominoes and they all had different like sort of attributes and stuff and they all had different skills and shit. It's a fucking brilliant puzzle game.
Should we do a feature of all those terrible
games? Yeah, we should definitely do
that. There's one where it was like tomato ketchup and I remember in the Amiga box you actually got sachets of ketchup and you had to guide tomatoes through a factory and avoid all the blades, otherwise they turn into ketchup.
And like Cool Spot is literally the fucking red bit from 7-Up, right?
Yeah, there's a Chupa Chups level in Zool.
There we go.
We've gone off topic.
Pushover or Tetris is mine. And on soundtracks, the same now. Don't know.
I used to really like Chuck Rock on Amiga. He got well into that and I just got well into Lemmings. I like the soundtrack for first Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, I think I got really into the soundtrack for like everyone getting like Cool Borders and shit like that because that had like and Tony Hawk obviously like I think basically anyone our age bought a skateboard and listened to Lagwagon for a long time.
I remember when
bought a skateboard, yeah, sat on it in their garage, listening to the soundtrack on cassette.
I remember playing the demo for Matt Hoffman's BMX and hearing AC/DC's TNT and thinking I'd discovered like this underground track. Yeah. I was like, this is fucking amazing.
Guys, you heard this?
Yeah. Yes, what was the first games you were into?
Mine was always, like, my dad had a Mac and we just had loads of knockoff versions of other famous games. So it was like, instead of Missile Command, it was Patriot Command, because it was Patriot Missiles. I got well into that, blowing up missiles.
Yeah.
So that was about it. Just loads of fake versions of other games.
Yeah.
And the best soundtrack ever made is FTL.
That's a good soundtrack.
Yeah. I work to that very often.
Like, that is definitely like my early memories of games, just playing demo discs.
Yeah.
Like from Mega Mix, I used to have like a massive box just full of floppies.
Yeah.
Just play them for like hours, and just trying all the samples. Yeah. And that also just saying, putting rewords into Workbench.
Yeah. Oh yes,
good one, eh? The good stuff.
Krupa.
You're right. This is from Ethan Hunt.
He says
in parenthesis, not the Mission Impossible one. Well, at no point did I think
was
a fictional character written, but thank you for clarifying.
He's sweaty little.
Oh, he's a spy. He's not like
he didn't use that, is he?
Yeah.
I haven't got the knock list. Following the most recent. Oh, where we stay in the Drake Hotel, Chicago? Why is he taking that Bible? What an idiot. Following the most
What's going on?
You need to brush up on your Mission Impossible knowledge, mate. Following the most recent show with Joe and Co, and aka Scrabbing the Rebs. Are you rebranding the podcast when we're not on it?
Nothing
Scrabbing
to do with
the
me.
Rebs. But I like Scrabbing the Rebs.
Talks about weird stuff they'd done in their sleep. I thought I'd send in some of my nightmarish actions.
I knew I should give this one to you.
We're never going away again.
I'm an intermittent sleepwalker, or so I've heard. My parents didn't even notice I was sleepwalking at first because you have your eyes wide open with a sort of vacant, glazed-over look, like a Krispy Kreme-esque look. One night, I went to my mum's room and stood by her bed asking for a knife. Bloody hell, mate. Which I was understandably mortified by the next day when looking at her devastated corpse. which I was understandably mortified by the next day when she told me. I didn't think I did it anymore, but a couple of weeks ago after a night out, I apparently was up in the night screaming, "Where is the fucking list?" The knock list, maybe.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend proceeding to throw a lamp to the ground. Either I was talking about the Liam Neeson film or really passionate about the weekly Tesco run. Going to get some rope to tie myself down, I think.
Jesus.
You shouldn't have, like, get out in the wild. I told you not to trust Emilio Estevez.
So we moved on from weird things we do in our sleep to falling asleep during films and then getting confused when you wake up as to what the films were. So my example was, I once fell asleep during Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, and it immediately afterwards started playing the deleted scenes, and I'd never seen it before and thought it was a really avant-garde time travel narrative. So this is from Mark Stewart on that subject. On last week's podcast, you spoke about falling asleep during films. My dad travels on planes a lot and thus watches a lot of films, show off, but is forever forgetting what they're called and so has to describe them to me with rough plot, actors, soundtracks and so on. He once came home adamant that he'd seen a film that was about a mute man who was trying to drive to an oasis with a bald woman in a huge truck. And in this oasis was Matt Damon, patiently waiting for them in a pretty futuristic settlement. Seems like this is a movie that just doesn't exist. What had happened is that he'd put on Mad Max, fallen asleep, woken up to The Martian, and then fallen asleep again. Love the podcast, Mark. I really like that. Accidental film mashups. That's quite good.
I remember a friend of mine, I was showing a friend of mine.
Inhalation then. I'll join.
I showed a friend of mine Dust Till Dawn and he fell asleep like before the turn. So he fell asleep when it was a road movie.
Oh, he's like,
amazing.
Gas put on live TV.
Yeah. And then he woke up when they were all fucking vampires and shit. So.
Have you ever fallen asleep during films and gotten really confused by what's happened?
No, I respect film as a craft too much.
I have fallen asleep during a film and woke up fucking a vampire.
Daniel Cooper.
Goodness me.
Well, that's it. That's all we got for you. If you want to get in touch, you can. And IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. We'll be back next week when actually we've got pretty awesome.
Another guest.
Have we?
Fucking Hodor from Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
And a story about his mental manager. So I'll leave you with that tease. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Hey, Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.